Inspiration, aspiration. I have to say, I can't claim all the credit. It came from Moira, one of the STEP committee. I was telling Moira at the lunch there that when she asked me to do this talk 6-8 months ago, we had a discussion about what the theme would be, and Moira came up with inspiration and aspiration. And I thought, that's actually brilliant. It's actually a brilliant theme. So much so that I've been writing this third book, which is now called The Inspiring Teachers, Aspiring Learners. And it came from that conversation. And it's so wonderful because it's so positive. Aspiration is so positive. Inspiration is so positive. It's much better than the abstract concepts of motivation and the woolly concepts of well-being that I've been working on for years. So very grateful to STEP. It's been a fantastic conference. It's downhill from now on. But it's just, my head is spinning with ideas. It's absolutely brilliant. The keynote this morning was fantastic for its clarity. And I managed to get to the GTC one and the EIS one, which is fabulous, and I'd strongly recommend the EIS video. It's very, very hard-hitting and stunning, so it's brilliant. David Cameron, he's actually older than me. He's much older than me, as is pretty obvious. But for 40... I said I'd slag him. For 40 years, he and I have worked, a lot of us, we've worked solidly about trying to close the gap for 40 years. We've been hitting our head against a brick wall. It's driving us mad. So I'm so impressed with teachers. They never stop trying. We never stop trying, which is fantastic. It's grit. But what's really interesting is why, the key question is, why is it so bloody hard? Why has this been so hard? And I've been thinking about this for 17 years in great detail. And the conclusion I've come to is it's all in poverty. And poverty is very material, but it's actually poverty. How does material poverty translate into psychological trauma or resilience? That's the key. How does poverty translate into psychological trauma or resilience? That's the key. And the most disadvantaged, underachieving kids, it goes to trauma. And the most achieving kids, it goes to resilience. That's how we do it. And I'm going to spend 40 minutes at a gallop showing you the model that I've been working on, and it's all down to identity. If I could summarize it in one word, the one word would be identity. That's what it's all about. Psychological poverty translates into difficult identities, and the kids with the highest achievement in Scotland have got the most wonderful, rounded identities. The kids with the lowest achievement in Scotland have got problematic identities. Identity is incredibly important. My life story, your life story is really important to you. My life story I can summarize in a few seconds. It's relevant to what I'm coming from. I was the youngest of six children in a working-class Catholic family in Springburn, in Scotland, I was going to say, in Springburn across the road. And when I was 16, it got me into psychology because I thought, what the hell's wrong with me? Why am I studying O-level Latin? I was the youngest of six, and I was the only person that went to university. Everybody else in my family was brilliant, but they went to the shipyard. Which is interesting, but I studied O-level Latin, and I thought, why am I studying O-level Latin? I was the only person in the street that was, I was the only person in Springburn that was studying O-level Latin. So I thought, that got me into the whole interest, intrinsic motivation. And then 17 years ago, it's very exact, because my son was 10 at the time, I bought my two sons a guitar, because I can play the guitar a wee bit, and after a fortnight, I said to my sons, that guitar's going in the bin in the morning. I've wasted 100 quid on you guys. And I thought, oops, international guru in psychology. And I just sound like my mother. I'm just using guilt. I thought, shit, I don't know anything about motivation. I've been working in education too long. That's a joke. and it's true. So 17 years later, this is where I am. And the motivated school, as David mentioned, my claim to fame is that was recently been translated into Chinese, which is pretty good because there's a lot of people in China. But some of my colleagues in Glasgow thought it was in Chinese already. That got me suspended, so that got me seconded. Sorry, I was seconded by the Scottish Government in 2006 for 5 years on the basis of that book. And that was fabulous because I spent 5 years picking people's brains, and I've continued to do that. And I used to be obsessed with working with 10-year-olds because I thought 10-year-old was the key stage. I've now realised it's 8-year-olds, and I'm currently working with a group of 8-year-olds in a school in Fife. And it's absolutely wonderful because what we're interested in is identity and selfhood. It's called selfhood. Scottish teachers have a statutory duty to develop children's personality. Did you know that? Well, you do. But personality just means, as a kind of layman's term, for selfhood, because it's much more complicated than personality. And I've lost track of my point here. What was I talking about? Oh, yeah, I've been working with 8-year-old children, and the good news is, by the time children are 8, the whole of selfhood expands and it comes alive. So it's between 8 and 9, 10, and it goes wrong. And, of course, children who are gubbed, a good Glasgow expression, if they're gubbed by 10, it's really difficult to kind of re-engage them. So any strategy, 8 and 10 is the bee's knees, because that's where it all goes right and it's where it all goes wrong. Anyway, I better shut up. I'm going to have a workshop. I don't like doing the talks. I'm going to get to think. I'm going to get you to think about various issues. Can I give you a quick reflection? Again, I don't know if you won't all have the handout we sent out the other day. Don't worry if you don't. You can get a copy later. But there are some things we want you to do. Here's a quick... How inspiring are you? Don't think about it too much. 0 to 100. Give yourself a score and write it down. How inspiring are you from 0 to 100? Just put inspiration and 25% or whatever. We're going to come back to that later on. A fantastic, again, a key, I can't resist it, a key question to walk back to. If you walk back into school on Monday, the first thing, one of the things you should do to your students is catch them unawares and just say, look, can we stop for a minute? Here's a post-it. Could you write down what percentage of your ability are you using in this right now? What percentage of your ability are you using right now? It's a fabulous question. Take in all the post-its and you'll have a great audit for your research purposes on the level of aspiration in that class. So simple, but incredibly interesting. And the kid that says 49%, that's very interesting, isn't it? Very interesting. Why did they go for 49%? And some kids will say 4%. And you'll be really worried, because they're dead honest. So it's a really interesting question. So, how inspiring are you? And then here's another interesting question. We all talk about support and challenge. Could you take 20 points and distribute them between support and challenge, off the top of your head, just to reflect your general teaching style? How do you approach students? Split it up between support and challenge, because you've got to do both. You do 15 to support, 5 to challenge, or the other way around. Just give yourself a score. As long as your score adds up to 20. Your score must add up to 20. Okay? So if you give yourself 12 for challenge, you can only have 8 for support, because we're distributing 20 points between support and challenge. You all got that? We'll come back to that later on. Reflection two, again, this is a bit of a challenge. I just want, off the top of your head, just a piece of paper, could you write down the emotions that come to your mind? Just as many as you can. Go for a dozen if you can. A dozen emotions. Just off the top of your head. Okay, should I also, can I just... While you're doing that, while you're merging your list together, could you start to differentiate the emotions? Because again, 8-year-olds is a great stage when children learn to understand their emotions. That's why they create their identity. And it's all about sorting out your emotions. That's why we're looking at this for a few seconds. And aspiration comes from emotions. Every emotion comes with its own pre-packed aspiration. So it's very, very interesting. Emotions are incredibly powerful. And they can be good and bad. I want you to go for your doublers, but also want you to divide into positive and negative. I'm using that very generally. Good, bad, positive, negative, happy, what's driving them. So we've got a series of emotions, some positive and some negative. I'm using that in a kind of, I don't like the word negative, I'd probably prefer defensive. We have we have energizing emotions. And we have defensive emotions. That's what and emotions are just our friends. They're really interesting. I'm going to help you sort them a wee bit further. And I'm going to introduce you to these two spirals. This is called the Ring of Autonomy. I've been obsessed with autonomy for several years because I think it's the gold dust to aspiration. It's the gold dust. It's the key to this whole thing. It's what drives us. And for several years, I've been bamboozling people, and I used to talk about the wings of autonomy. I used to think they were wings, because explaining autonomy to children is very difficult. The other psychological needs of affiliation and agency are easier to show to children. But autonomy is so complex because it's a curve. It's a bit like you can have too much autonomy or too little autonomy. It's best to be in the middle. Explaining that is quite complicated. So for several years, I experimented with the wings of autonomy. I split autonomy into two, which is a kind of radical kind of concept, and I had two wings of autonomy, but I kind of bamboozled people. And over a year ago, I had a brilliant, I had a light bulb moment when I thought, they're not wings, they're actually spirals. And these are the two spirals of autonomy. And you'll see here, this doesn't work. The spiral, the white spiral starts very thin and then gets bigger and then gets fat. And then the grey spiral starts small and gets thinner. It gets optimal at the top and gets fat. And these two things work together. And a guy called Aristotle, a couple of thousand years ago, nothing new in this world, he said, all qualities are best to be in moderation. And what he actually meant was, one good quality has to accompany another good quality. And you mentioned something this morning, which I've forgotten. I've written it down. You talked about two things. Oh, yeah, well, excellence and equity, they have to come together. They're no use on their own. Most qualities come together. Pride and humility, communism, capitalism, reason, passion, all sorts of things, competition, cooperation, they all come. And it's balance. Balance is what we're looking for. So let me start with equity. I talk to children about fairness. Children are obsessed with fairness, big time. So let's exploit that interest. Fairness is all about we and me. It's all about me, but it's also about we, the we me. I call it we me, and so the key motive in life is to be fair to yourself. That's fantastic. But what else do you need? What do we need?
Sex.
Sorry? Sex, did somebody say?
I would list that, but no, I said
acceptance.
Acceptance.
Accepting sex?
Acceptance.
Make it easier. That's the ultimate form of acceptance.
Yeah. Fair to others. So we need to be fair. It's all fair, good to be fair to yourselves, but we need to be fair to others. That's it in a nutshell, basically. But if we have these two things balanced, that's fantastic. But what happens? What happens if? And there's the direction of travel here, and this is very dynamic. So over here, we're being fair to others pretty much, but we're also being fair to ourselves a wee bit, so we're fairly balanced. And then over here, again, we're being fair to ourselves quite a bit. But we're still reasonably fair to other people. So anywhere up the top, we're fairly balanced. Well, let me introduce you to the dark side. What happens? What happens when you're fair to self, but you don't give a shit about anybody else? What's that going to be like? How would you describe that?
Selfish.
Sorry?
Selfish.
Selfish. Anything else?
Lonely.
Lonely, absolutely. Anything else? Greed. Yeah. Narcissism. Narcissism. Narcissism, greed, arrogance. Donald Trump's just coming to my mind. David Cameron. Not you, David. No, maybe it is you. God, I've just had a light bulb moment there.
Yeah, absolutely. So
it's basically, it's... When we're talking with kids, they call them the jinxes, and there are two jinxes. And the first one is, as you said, too selfish. You're too selfish. You're arrogant. You're narcissistic. You're a dictator. You're a bully. All the sort of things, agreed. We overshoot. We just take it too far. We lack balance. But what about the other side? When you're fair to others, and you've got no oomph, you've got no goals, what happens then? You're fair to other people. You're fair to other people, but you've got no personal goals. You're a doormat. Brilliant. You're a doormat. Anything else?
You lose your own identity.
Absolutely. Brilliant. You lose your own, exactly. You lose your own identity. And where's your achievement going to be there? Because achievement is totally dependent on your identity. You're a doormat. Anything else?
Exploited.
You're exploited, absolutely. You're easily exploited. You're vulnerable. You're a self-sacrificing doormat. You're a pushover. Again, these are very pejorative terms, which I just use for brevity.
Bullied and abused.
You're bullied and abused, absolutely. So this is actually quite simple, and children can understand this. It's good to get the kids' own language. What do I call it? You're too soft. Maybe too soft is wrong, because there's nothing wrong with being too soft, but if I've just got a good word to cover that, then please tell me, because it's difficult to... Words are really, really important. Who said that? That's incredibly complicated. I've used that a lot, but it's incredibly complicated. We could spend the whole conference talking about self-sacrificing. Thanks for that. Okay, now let's, and again, see if you can do this with your emotions, just very, very quickly. We can split the emotions into, in fact, I'll give you 30 seconds to try it. Could you try and distribute your emotions into these four quadrants? And if there's anything missing, if you don't have any for a quadrant, think something up. Just try and put the emotions into the different quadrants if you can. It's a bit of a challenge going so fast. Okay. Has anybody cracked it? Has anybody got the four quadrants covered? I'm only giving you 30 seconds to do it. Is that a useful exercise to do? Is it challenge? Is it possible? We're getting there. I'm doing it very, very fast. But if you did it with students and colleagues, it's very useful to start talking about emotions. Emotions are incredibly important because they're driving everything. And I can guarantee you the biggest factor in a school's success is the emotionality of that school. But have you ever had a staff meeting where on the agenda is the emotional life of this school? Probably not. You probably do it indirectly. So what we're trying to do is give you a structure here to help sense of all this psychological stuff. It's incredibly complicated, incredibly sensitive. But if you get a structure, it depersonalises and it lets you kind of think things through, which is what I'm really interested in. So I'm doing this very fast, and you might not agree with me. There's no right or wrong answer. I'm not being didactic here, but having thought about it, this is where I would put... we come up with this generally from a class of 8-year-olds in a school in Fife. We did this exercise and we said, what are you when you're up in that top left-hand quadrant? And the key word was chuffed, which was brilliant because that's just a fantastic word, chuffed. And I was so delighted because the head teacher told me the other day, she said, this stuff's really working. Because I was in the class the other day and we're doing this engineering project. And the kids looked so pleased with themselves. And she said, how are you getting on with your project? And this boy says, oh, I'm really chuffed. And then he paused, he said, but I'm humble with it. So, humbly chuffed. I was in tears when I heard that story. It's just perfect. Because you need to be balanced. Because why? Because there's the kind. You need to be kind and humble and concerned for other people. You need to be fair about other people. And again, when you say to kids, can you be... And kids have got this intuition. It's fantastic. You say to them, can chuff get you into bother? And of course, they'll know right away. And they'll say, oh, yeah, we jinx ourselves. That's the language, that we jinx ourselves. How do you do that? Well, we're too chuffed. We're too cocky. You know, and then they talk about sport a lot and different things, the hockey team, and we're going to win. Of course, they don't. And then they start to talk about the learning and so on. It's really interesting. There's sort of an intuitive knowledge we need to tap into. So there's jinx number one, is you can be too chuffed. You're mean, you're bossy, you're arrogant and pushy. They don't use the words arrogant. 8-year-olds wouldn't understand arrogance because they don't have that sense of identity yet. But they certainly know that you're mean and bossy and huffy and so on. Okay, what about the other side? What's jinx number two? What's the other way we can jinx ourselves? In what way? Yeah, well, that's a good example of self-defeat, which we'll come back to later on. You're shooting ahead of me there.
Self-neglect.
Again, it's like self-sacrifice. Kids wouldn't understand, wouldn't say self-neglect. But what would a child say? What would an eight-year-old say about that? You're in the right track. Sorry? They're better than me. Yep. Anything else?
I think you should see them saying, I'm rubbish.
I'm rubbish at everything. One of the things we've got on the website that's in your handout is the Aspiring profile, where 8-year-olds can complete a profile about their own attitude to learning. And it's terrifying how many children tick the one, I'm rubbish at everything, which is amazing. And 5% of children tick the one, I'm ashamed of myself, which is very worrying. And we've got another one from because a lot of kids have said it to me. Sometimes I wish I'd never been born. So it's a big, heavy scene, but we need to kind of think about that. The self-neglect, the jinx number two for kids is very much, and we role-played it. We got kids to role-play this because they didn't fully work it out. That one is dead easy. The Donald Trump thing is dead easy. We're all aware of people that drive us mad, but we're not aware of the other side because it's much more subtle. So we got them to role play, and one child immediately said, "Here, you can have all my lunch." And I thought, "Wait a minute, hold on, what's going on here? Why did you do that?" And then the boy said, "Because I like him." And I said, "Well, it's not just because you like him. What else is it?" And you couldn't make this up. The only boy in the class, the only kid in the class who answered that was visually impaired. He was 90% blind. He said, it's because he wants him to like him. And of course, a penny dropped. Everybody, we're worried about being liked. Because that's the biggest motive in a classroom. The biggest, the most important thing in a classroom is, do people like me? You can have all the curriculum for excellence, all the best curriculum in the world, but if the kids are sitting there saying, nobody likes me. So it's interesting, isn't it? So that jinx number two is being unfair to self, self-neglect, and it's basically you're worried about other people liking me, then you become too kind, you become self-sacrificing, and you get pushed about. That's basically the model, and I just call that the fairness chart. And again, the school are using that to look at all sorts of dynamics. And, of course, restorative justice, rights-respecting school, it's right up there. It's fantastic. It just lets them articulate that. And what I've done here is, this is the way I've done it, just very briefly. Basically, pride's up there and excitement on the top left. On the top right is forgiveness, kindness, gratitude, empathy, humility, all that sort of stuff. The bottom left is jealousy, resentment, anger and hate. Very powerful, very destructive emotions, but very defensive emotions. And then the last one is fear, embarrassment, guilt and ashamed. These are all the putting down self. And these are all really, really interesting ways we can screw ourselves up and so on. But emotions, our identity comes from our emotions. So if you help children understand their emotions, it'll help them clarify their identity. And identity becomes big when you're 13, 14, 15 and so on, incredibly. But if you've had a good schooling and if you can leave primary school with a clear understanding of all your emotions and a positive identity, what a gift that is in terms of your achievement. You'll see anger's up the top as well. That's because it's complicated. There's two types of anger. There's entitlement anger, which is I'm a special person and I'm annoyed. And then there's righteous anger, which is you can't get a better emotion than that. Anger is just like electricity. It's how we use it. So I'm doing this very fast, but it's just to show you the psychology of all this stuff. So why does poverty impact? Because it impacts on children's identity and their emotions, stigma, shame, all this sort of stuff that's been mentioned this morning. And then I'm just going to take you, use this spiral, this ring. We differentiated it for 8-year-olds in 4 quadrants, but for older kids, we can differentiate it into 10 zones. Hell of a lot going on there, and we're just going to distribute them into the different, because we can use that to kind of sort further. And we're going to bring in identity. And what's really interesting and what such good news is, people think personality is a bee's knees. Personality is not that relevant. The bad news is we can't change people's personalities. But the good news is it's not that important. What's much more important is identity, a sense of self. And the even better news is teachers have a huge impact on children's sense of identity because it's very, very dynamic. And it changes all the time. Could you see yourself as a different person with different people, depending how much you've had to drink, what's going on and so on? We change all the time. We've got some core identities, but we change a lot. And it's very dynamic. Here's a very quick 10 identities. We can have a fulfilling self, which is all about leadership. We can have a promoting self. We're pushing ourselves, which is great. We can have a giving self, who's very unassuming. We can have an attention-seeking self, the class clown. We can have a resentful self, sulking, I'm in the huff. Men do that a lot, David, don't they? David, I used to do that a lot. I'll get into that. The imposing self, dominance. We just want to dominate. We want our own way. The doubting self, confusion, doubt, anxiety. The protecting self. I can guarantee you from all the research I've done in the last 15 years that 15% typically of a school children will be hiding. They'll spend most of their time hiding because they're protecting themselves, because they're worried about humiliation and fear of failure and all sorts of emotional things. So they just hide, and they get very good at hiding because they're protecting themselves. And then the most difficult one of all is the deflating self. And again, it's interesting. It took me about 12 years in the research I was doing to discover this kind of deflating self, this self-neglecting kind of child. Nobody identified it because it's not a problem. And the parents of these children would come up to the school and say, I'm really worried about my daughter. She's very anxious and depressed and so on. And the school would reassure the parents, oh, she's a lovely child. But they didn't realize they were so vulnerable because they don't communicate hostility. So it's very, very interesting. And then the last one is the destructive bit. That was your point about you're just destructive. You destroy yourself. It's a defeating self. That's very complicated. And I'm going to give you another layer of complications because we can look at different aspirations that come from these kind of stances. There's somebody who wants the group fulfillment. We want our own and the group fulfillment. Fantastic. We want status. I love status. I want to be the top dog. I want to be the top of the pecking order. I want to be the best at everything. Do you recognize students that are driven by status? Directors of education. There we go. Valued. I want to be valued. I want to make a contribution so that I'm valued. I want to impress people. I want special treatment because I'm special, the special one. I'm Jose Mourinho. I'm special. I want domination. I want your job. I want to be the teacher. I want to be in control of this place. And then I want acceptance. I want accept. Just accept me. I want to fit in. Just accept me. I want to avoid humiliation. I want to confirm that I'm crap. Don't praise me, whatever I do. Please don't praise me, because you're just gonna screw me up if you praise me. That's why people rip up the. Because you praised them. You've confused them. And then the last one is they take everybody else down. So that's different aspirations. No wonder the job's challenging, because that's the dynamics of a classroom. Huge amount of a lot going on. Hell of a lot going on there. Let's try and simplify that for you. And we brought in the learning stances. The learning stances are just a heuristic for children and student and teachers to understand. You don't need to understand all the psychology stuff. And it's dead simple. There are 10 stances. There's the leading stance. These are the kids that you want. Any time HMI come in, you would love to interview these children. But they never do. They never do. So that's the leading child. Are you developing these children enough? Are you taking full opportunity of these fantastically mature children? This is the performing stance. These are not children. These are stances. It's So children move around there all the time. It's got to be very dynamic. This is a very open mindset idea. It's not fixed. We're not pigeonholing people here. It's just we're understanding where they're coming from. That's the performing stance. That's the team playing stance. Anywhere at the top is fantastic. There's the attention-seeking stance, the sulking stance when children go in a huff. There's the taking over stance, the classroom terrorists, I used to call them. They just want to kind of take control. And there's the people-pleasing stance. You could apply this to colleagues, apply this to your in-laws. Have a staff night out and then put everybody's in. There's the hiding stance. There's the taking things to heart stance, and the last one is the own worst enemy stance. I call it the upset and angry stance, or the bitter and twisted stance. You're both upset and angry. And it's really important to understand, to be a rounded person, you need to experience all of this. It's important sometimes when you're a new head teacher to hide for a couple of weeks. And it's important if you're annoyed and angry to express that and to get angry. And you know, it's important to express all these things. That's what makes us rounded. Anyway, that's the simple stances there. And we can show them quite easily. There's team playing, performing, leading, attention-seeking, people-pleasing, sulking. That's my favourite one. I think I identify with the sulking one, the hiding one. That's taking things to heart, taking over, and own worst enemy, and so on. So that just gives you a very quick look at the stances. And 8-year-olds from up will understand that, and the key message is it's very dynamic and people are changing all the time. But some people do get stuck in a stance, don't they? And it's hard to kind of move them out of that. So we'll bash on very quickly. This is the hard bit, and I'll take a couple of minutes just to explain the theory. I'll do it very quickly. Personal autonomy is incredibly important. That's the ability to be self-determining. And again, the GTC are very strong on that, which is fantastic. But personal autonomy is no use on its own. We also have to have its twin, which is shared autonomy. We need to be self-directing, but we have to realise we're self-directing within a team. And it's a collective autonomy. It's like pooling sovereignty, to mention the referendums and so on. We like this sharing autonomy. And if you get these two things balanced, that's maturity. But it's not as simple as that. There are other needs, and I can tell you very quickly, there are four needs. There's shared autonomy and personal autonomy. The other big need is affiliation. And the bottom of affiliation, affiliation is fundamental, basically. It's a sense of belonging. I've told this story a million times over the last 10 years. I'll tell it again. I was in a school in Glasgow a few years ago, and they asked me to go on the motivated school journey. And I was in the staff room I was in the school for half an hour, and I had to say to the head teacher, "I'm really sorry. I don't think you're ready for this." And she said, "Why not?" I said, "I've just been to the staff room, and I've just seen 17 jars of coffee." I said, "I'll come back when you're a one jar of coffee school." Because you can't give what you don't have. If the team aren't talking to each other, you can't create an affiliation for the pupils. So it's really important to get the ethos and the culture right. So that's affiliation, sense of belonging. And the other one is agency, which is just a jargony word for confidence. Children need confidence to progress. And that's the four needs. And that's basically low, emerging, and high. Don't worry about that too much. The opposite end, the fag end of affiliation is disconnection. And that's for children who feel rejected and so on. That's probably the biggest source of behaviour problems in your school. They feel rejected. And the other problem is apathy, because they just don't have any confidence in maths or science or so on. So these are fundamental drivers of human behaviour. If you put them all together, you've got affiliation as the foundation for shared autonomy. Affiliation is basically, I'm here to belong. It's a social club, it's like a youth club. But shared autonomy is now I'm here to contribute. There's a subtle difference. Some people just go to school, come to the school for a laugh. They come to the school for the affiliation, but they don't come for shared autonomy. And then the other side is agency. Agency is the foundation for personal autonomy. I'll help you differentiate. Agency is the rehearsal room. where you practice. Personal autonomy is the stage where you perform. So it comes together. I need the agency to have personal autonomy. If I don't have any agency, I'm not going to have any personal autonomy. So they're all interconnected. But that's the four needs which drive absolutely everything. And I can do this very quickly because I've done it already. If you've got personal autonomy and agency, but you don't care about anyone else, you're going to be arrogant, and that's going to lead to corrupted autonomy, which is all that difficulty of just basically being distorted and selfish. And on the other hand, if you've got lots of shared autonomy, you're a really nice person, you're accommodating, you're cooperating, but you don't have any personal goals for yourself, what's going to happen there?
Lost.
Sorry?
Lost.
You get lost, yeah. Anything else? Yeah, you've no credibility.
Don't fulfill
you don't fulfill your potential, absolutely. What kind of behaviours do you show? You're very accommodating. You're anxious, yeah.
Get overworked.
You get overworked. Why? Because
exactly.
You so you're stressed. You're stressed. You're back to that self-sacrificing doormat again. And interestingly, you're compliant. And compliant is fine. And behaviour is fine, and obedience is fine, but as long as it's in your interests, it's when it's not in your interests it starts to become abusive and so on. So compliance goes too far, and you've got surrendered autonomy. You just surrender your autonomy. And that's the full model. So I'm pleased I've got through that. In the handout, there's some quite detailed pictures and background to help you explain that, help you think about that. Let's keep it simple. What do your students need to achieve their potential? They need to feel accepted. They need to feel confident. They need to feel valued. And they need to feel trusted. And the good news is these all map onto the four capacities. The four capacities are absolutely fantastic. Pure summary psychology. You couldn't get any better. The four capacities just cover it beautifully. So what are the four principles of inspiration? We map the four principles of inspiration onto the four needs, because we need to kind of we need to press these four buttons. So we need to give students warmth. So that's the first principle. I need to be warm and encouraging and belonging and take an interest in you, and everything that teachers do all the time to show connection. I want to connect with you, and I don't have time to go into details. There's lots of stuff on the website about it. But it's basically, I want to get to know you. Think about the lollipop lady who gets 200 boxes of chocolates at Christmas. And you'll know what I'm talking about. Just connect with everybody. The second one is, as opposed to neglect students, the second one is encouragement, foundational. Praise is fantastic. Encouragement's even better. The best form of encouragement is, surprise, surprise, what impacts on students' identity. I think you would make a fantastic nurse. All of a sudden, that kid's life's been transformed. What? Really? Tell me why. Because you're so patient and you're so sensitive. You're so empathic. You're incredible. You can read people like a book and you think, wow, I didn't know that. And all of a sudden, that child's life's been transformed. And the key is that... I'm summarising. You can nurture a student's identity. You know the best way to nurture a student's identity is give them an aspiration. Discover their own aspirations and encourage them. For God's sake, never crush an aspiration. As long as a student... if I was a primary... I'd love to be a primary school teacher, I think. I'm a frustrated primary school teacher. If I had a group of 10-year-olds and if I knew every single kid had an aspiration, I'd sleep at night. Because that's all I need. Because aspirations pull everything together. It's magical if you get the right aspiration. Anyway, that's encouragement. And as opposed to being undemanding, these are actually quite easy. And most teachers are brilliant at warmth and encouragement because that's what got them into the job. What's a bit more difficult... and that's the challenge for Curriculum for Excellence, is the higher order ones. You need to give children independence, foster independence. I'm the boss, I'm in charge. Here's a structure, but as soon as possible, give them autonomy, give them independence, give them exclusive responsibility for planning, choice, all that sort of stuff. Very challenging to do that. And the other one is share the reins, which is basically partnership. I really trust you, and let's co-learn. It's all this co-learning stuff, cooperative learning. And again, a wee tip, the best way to show partnership is, could you give me some feedback on my teaching style? Kids love that. They absolutely love that. And it's so empowering. And I've done it with thousands of children, and not one student's abused it. And if you're interested in doing that, just go on the website and you'll find the Inspire Ring, which allows you to profile your own teaching style and then give it to your class. And then they can complete it as well. And they'll love it. I guarantee you, money back guaranteed, the students will love it. And then you'll get some fantastic feedback. So that's the four principles of inspiration. We can actually summarise that quite, and then we can just, the same as before, if you're a teacher who's dead pushy, I'm charismatic, I'm dead pushy, I'm dynamic, I just teach from my personality. Kids love me. No, they don't. Because you're too provocative and you end up being over-demanding. I hate that teacher. He makes so many demands on me. I just can't stand him. And he's just up himself. That's the kind of conversations you hear from kids. If you're a teacher, you can get away with murder as long as you're cuddly and warm and friendly. You can't combine demanding with coldness. It does not work. It does not work. That's why kids hate you. And they'll use hate. And they'll mean it because you're over-demanding. On the other side, there's nothing wrong with being provocative and still wind them up, but you need to watch that. On the other side, there's, again, the sharing the reins. You're protective. Can protection go too far? What would that be called as a teacher?
Smothering.
Smothering's an interesting word, because if you take the S off it, you get mothering. So I've coined a new word called fathering just to balance the books. So you're undemanding and you're overprotecting. And again, that's the model again in terms of teaching. And we can actually summarise that, because that's challenge and that's support, which is quite neat. Support and challenge. Now, could you go back to what seems like 5 hours ago when I asked you to distribute 20 points between support and challenge? Have you all got that? What's interesting was I asked you to add them up, but they're not really an addition sum. I cheated. It's actually a multiplication sum. You need to multiply these two together. Do you mind doing that? So, and then you can plot yourself on that chart. So you need to multiply support and challenge. You don't add them up, because they're not mutually exclusive.
Is support the green?
Good question. Challenge is the green. I'm glad you asked me that. Okay, a bit. Just to, basically, and it's really interesting, you could have a good seminar on why support and challenge, why the two together, and I'm sure you could work it out, because you need both of them. But what's interesting is when you start to multiply them. So, for example, if you're 8 and 12, you're 12 for support, 8 for challenge, that's pretty good. So you get a score of 96. And if you're somebody that's more, I'm more into challenge, but I'm 13 to 7, I'm 91. It gets really interesting. I run a nurture class. I'm so nurturing. What are you for support? Oh, I'm 18. Well, that's bad news, because that leaves you 2 for challenge. So that's you 36. That's not a lot of good, is it? So it's the same way here. I'm that charismatic PE teacher. I'm stereotyping for the sake of it. I'm dead demanding. I'll let other people do the support. Oh, do you? Well, that means you're 17 times 3. You're 51. Oh, am I? Oh, I thought I was. But I see that thing when how inspirational I am. I put 92% for that. Oh, did you? Well, that's interesting, isn't it? So you've got two scores. You've got your score for inspiration, and you've also got your score for support and challenge. And if you do the Inspire Ring, you'll get another score, which is much more systematic, because it's based on 100 questions. I'll just take 30 seconds to finish. The quality of your support will determine how learners respond to your challenge, and that's because affiliation is a fundamental need. You can have a fantastic challenge, but your support, it will be determined by your support. So you have to get the support right. And if you're supportive, you can challenge all you like. But if you don't support, the challenge will be counterproductive and it'll rebound on you. And again, there's a handout there, but it's called the Four Wise Principles: warmth, independence. And you need to be firing on all four cylinders. That's why your job is so challenging. That's why you get paid so much. And that's why you get such fantastic holidays. Support and challenge, just to finish, again, it's the same thing. We can split up support and challenge. And basically, think about teaching styles. To summarise, there are two types of teachers in the world, to simplify it. You're either a squeezer or a hugger, or ideally a squogger. We want Scotland to be full of squoggers who have a bit of a balance and so on. And that's these are the 10 teaching styles: the squeezing style, hugging style, the inspiring style. And then sometimes children will pull us into the dark side. We'll be having a bad day. We've got good day styles and bad day styles. And there's the posing style. You're just showing off how clever you are. Or the pleasing style. You just want the kids to love you. Or the neglecting. That's the huffy teacher who has favourites and manipulates children. This is the undemanding style. That's the stomach that's going up and down, by the way. I can see. I know how his brain works. And then there's the bruising style. There's the smothering style. We're trying to make it lighthearted. And then the last one is the draining style, which is quite nice. So that's me. I'm over my time. But just for information, in the handout, you'll see the identity tree. We call it the identity tree. To summarise, I won't go into detail, but we need to try and explain all the different aspects of selfhood, and people need a metaphor, so we've come up with a tree. And very quickly, I won't do it, it's silly. It's time. Okay, thank you very much.